teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So, somebody texted in, 0002. Who has the most power in baseball right now? Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez.
Woo. I mean, health concerns aside, I just think when you look at hard hit baseballs, I think I take Judge out of it and I look at one of those two dudes. I mean, Stanton just hits absolute lasers. Even the home runs he hits are a lot of times on a clothesline, and Yordan just hits bombs of distance that are just these mega shots. Yeah. It's between those two dudes, and I mean, I know, and obviously the homer in me too says it's Yordan, but my goodness, when Stanton's healthy, he hits nothing but just absolute seeds.
I think the answer is Alvarez because...
I think the answer is Giancarlo.
Because I know Giancarlo hits just... I mean, he just hits missiles.
Yeah.
But when Alvarez... Some of his home runs that just travel so far... It's how it looks effortless.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, like the effort in the swing doesn't look the same as some of these other guys, like how much like force
but
they have.
On that note though, Joe, you know why Stanton gets penalized? Is because he hits him so low on such a line that he doesn't get the majestic shot that you can go, that thing traveled so far, it passed the scoreboard and hit this and yeah. Some dude caught out on that level. He just hits them, like you said, missile's a great way of describing it. It just stays on a line right above the wall, and you never know how far it could have gone if it had, like, a higher trajectory.
Yeah.
Because it just gets out in a heartbeat.
The other guy, would you put Ohtani in this conversation?
Hold on real quick. Here's the thing about, like, these three specifically, is that we're talking specifically power. Like, we're not talking about the ability to hit.
Right.
We're not talking about who's the better hitter. We're not talking about who would hit more home runs.
Right.
We're talking strictly the power attribute. And I think Giancarlo Stanton has the best power attribute. The reason that Giancarlo Stanton doesn't always have tons of home runs and lead the league every year is a couple of things. Blankers, you mentioned one. Yeah. The biggest one is that he can't stay on the field, is that he's really injury-riddled and injury-prone. Secondly, he has terrible contact. Like, that's what to really put your power on display, you have to have the ability to have some contact to your game. That's what makes Yordan Alvarez a unicorn, is that Yordan Alvarez has top five power, but he's also one of the better contact hitters in the game that doesn't strike out a ton, and he's got a great eye.
I mean, Jeremy, to your point, too, if you look at just the hardest hit baseballs year in, year out, so it doesn't matter how many at-bats you've had or all the other things you're talking about, Stanton's up there every single year because when he does put barrel of bat to ball, it is, like, destructive in how hard they're hit.
And those three guys, like, the worst hitter is Giancarlo. They're, like, he is the worst hitter between Judge and Yordan. And he never hits for great average because he can't really put the ball in play a ton. I also think he's got a terrible swing that cuts his power in half sometimes. Like, he's kind of like a half swing, take it the opposite way, and he only yanks home runs out.
Yeah, his stance, that diagonal in the
with
box.
Hanging breaking balls and off-speed pitches.
Yeah, he exaggerates that front foot diagonal in the box, and I think he doesn't really open up his hip as much as he possibly could. You're right about that. He tries to stay compact, too, and I think that hurts how much, even if it's possible, how much more power he might be able to put into a swing.
Power alone, I think he has it. And look, I don't think power is anywhere close to being the most important attribute. I mean, Yordan's a way better hitter. Judge is obviously a way better hitter. Joe talking about Shohei, I think Shohei has tremendous pop, tremendous power. He probably belongs in that conversation. DG on Twitch says Vlad Jr., he's in the mix. E and King of Twitch say Robert Acuna with the Atlanta Braves, who, if you're not watching Acuna, he is the most exciting player in baseball right now.
He's really good. He's a five-tooler, and he's almost must-see TV. You're right. I was wondering about Juan Soto, and he's
Acuna, my bad.
He's taken kind of a step back since he got to San Diego, but I know that aside from, you know, fixating on his age with Joe Buck, he was fully capable with Washington of just ripping a cover off of a baseball, too. It's just he's lost a lot of luster because since the trade happened, I don't think he's been nearly the same kind of player.
So just for, and I know it's not the end-all, be-all, but like in terms of exit velocity, Giancarlo Stanton had four of the hardest hit home runs last season.
Yeah.
Of the top 15.
I think that's a good measure of power.
That's what I was going to.
I think it's a really good measure of power.
The highest was 119.8.
And those are just home runs?
Yeah, just home runs.
Okay, because I was also, referring to what Jeremy was talking about when I brought that up, it also just the hardest hit baseballs on the year, whether they got out of the park or not. Like, because sometimes you can hit a laser that ends up in the corner or between short and third. But, yeah, he's always consistently, like, has multiple entries in the top five.
Yeah, I think he has the best power in the game. But of those power hitters that we're talking about, he probably has the worst contact of all of those guys. Like, that's why he hits 240, and whenever he can stay healthy, he hits 40, 45 home runs. Did you make any other point about Shohei, Joe, other than him belonging in that conversation?
No, I was just going to say, what about Shohei? Because, like, he's one of those guys, too, that, like, there's sometimes – he's number two on this list. When him and Stan are tied again at 118 for a homer last year, it just – it's so different when it looks like when he really cranks one. Like, his whole body torques in a way that's different than everyone else. Like, his whole upper body just, like, swings with it. It's just
– I think Trout, from this regard, I think Trout almost kind of gets penalized.
Sure.
Because he's a low ball hitter. So he's constantly fixated and trying to hit the low ball, and he doesn't hit those majestic shots or get those scenic balls that find a way to just keep traveling. He hits a lot of really hard baseballs that are base hits, doubles, and in the park because he's such a low ball hitter.
He obviously has great power. I don't know if I'm going to put him in the raw power of, you know, Stanton and even Judge, maybe Acuna, maybe Vlad. I was reading an article about Yordan Alvarez today. There was an article on him on Fox Sports. Rowan Kavner pinned the article and had some pretty good quotes from Mauricio Dubon. The best quote, though, and like, Yordan Alvarez is such like – he's such a bad dude. Like, he's such a bad son of a gun. You know, he's a mother, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Yordan Alvarez, they asked him, the quote at the end of the story says, "My only goal, I just ask God to keep me healthy," Alvarez said. "After that, ... I think I can take care of the rest."
That's a good quote.
He's like, "I got this."
That's when you put the bat back in the holster and you walk through the swinging doors and tip the cowboy hat and say, "Whoever's on the mound next, let's go."
I love that. I love that quote. He is so freaking good.
What a steal the Astros got, man.
Fields. That was such a robbery. Paul Gallant, he had this to say, I can't remember what he said, a couple days ago. You have the audio, Joe? Paul Gallant has a theory, not a theory, more of a prediction of what's going to happen with the Astros by the end of the month.
The Astros just wrapped up a brutal month of baseball. 30 games, 18 on the road, all but three of the teams they played over that 30-game stretch are above 500. And on average, if you total all 10 of the teams that the Astros played, they have a winning percentage of 56.6%. Over 162 games, that's around 92 wins. So they just played a month against an average of teams that are on pace for 92 wins. And they went 16-14 over the month. That's not bad. Considering all of the injuries coming up, they're playing some poop. It's a cupcake buffet on deck. White Sox stink. Cubs stink. Two series against the A's and the Milwaukee Brewers, who have lost 8 of their last 10. I think they'll be first in the American League West by the end of the month.
They're playing poop. They're playing a cupcake buffet.
How does Joe George feel that his two favorite teams were basically called glorified excrement?
Yeah, his tough. Two favorite teams.
Yeah, that show does not like the teams that I root for.
No.
At all. Mapes was coming at the Bears pretty hard today.
Was he?
For what?
Yeah. Just he said he doesn't want to see him on national television at all next year. I don't blame him.
Who does?
But, I mean, he's probably not wrong.
Who wants to see the running game on steroids?
A lot of people, apparently.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's weird. So many prime. Green Bay too. Like the fact that they have
five
they
is went, crazy to me.
They went with a cachet. They went with like names that are popular more than like good teams. How would a cupcake buffet do? Do you think that would do well? Would that do good business?
No.
Would that be plus expected value?
We did cupcakes at the wet at my wedding.
We did too.
We didn't do
oh, really.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
Barry Warner took three doggy bags home.
No way.
Yes, he did.
Goodness, chirp chirp.
Without question. You know how my wife was trying to be extremely polite because we had a whole like a dessert bar and cupcakes. And so there were like these to-go bags so that everybody, if they tried cake and something else or there was cookies and cupcakes, they could take a few. And I saw Barry leaving with luggage.
My goodness.
And I was like, well, there won't be any for tomorrow for everybody else, but He's going to be full for a while.
Joe did that at my wedding, too, with the banana pudding.
That's not true.
He took all of the banana pudding.
There was banana pudding at your wedding?
Yeah, there sure was.
I guess I don't remember that.
Love me some banana. Yeah, you had too many of the margaritas.
I just remember the climb up the mountain.
Yeah, it was quite a – well, I didn't have to do that. I parked at the top because I was the groom.
There was the groom's cake at my wedding that was an exact replica of Lambeau Field. Just want to let you know.
Hey, speaking of the Packers.
Tell me you're a Packer fan.
Speaking of the Packers here.
Yeah.
Simone Biles' husband just signed with the Packers.
Did he
Jonathan
really?
Jonathan Biles is a Packer?
Yeah.
You think Simone's going to move
TMZ.
To Green Bay?
That's probably a hard no.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think she would find enjoyment in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I was hoping they were going to re-sign him.
Yeah,
I thought that they would too.
I thought he was like a good depth piece.
Absolutely for depth, I thought they would. We talked about it a few weeks back, and I thought that he'd be back.
So can the Astros be at first place at the end of the month?
So I looked at, right now the Rangers have a 4-game lead in the loss column, and I was with Paul regardless in the fact that I knew they
four
had series.
In the win column too, Blinkers.
Oh, I understand, but I'm just saying the loss column is what I always judge in terms of like how much distance you have to make up and where you, and how the standings really truly sit because you're not playing the same games all the time at the same amount of time. I think to make up 4 games in the loss column between now and the end of May with the schedule that they're playing, and I haven't looked at the Rangers schedule, but I knew that the A's and the White Sox were bad. I didn't know that they had two series against the A's. I'm not going to crap on the Cubs because they've actually surprised me that they're winning more games than I thought they would, and I don't think they're a bad team. But I also think you have to keep in mind that the Astros normally kind of step up their game for the better teams in baseball to kind of keep proving their point that they're not going anywhere. And then they kind of sometimes fall asleep, as we've seen in the past couple of years, when they're playing lesser thans, like the A's. So it does concern me. I want to say Paul's right, and I want to say that I kind of am leaning the same way. I'm just a little leery of the fact that the Stros have a way of playing to the level of their competition, and that scares me a little bit.
That was a long way to say I don't know. Is it a yes or a no?
Jeez. Okay, yes.
Yes or no?
Yes, I think they will.
Stay there in first place? I'll go the opposite way. Not because of anything the Astros will do. But 4 games in 18 games is hard to, like, overcome that quickly. And the Rangers are playing pretty good ball right now. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. They've won back-to-back games. I think that the Astros will make a little bit of a run here, but I don't think that they'll be able to jump the Rangers by the end of the calendar month. I think it's going to take June, July before they do climb to first, and that's fine. There's still lots of baseball. It's a marathon, not a sprint. But 4 games in 18 games is hard to make up. I'll say that the Astros are a couple of games shy of jumping the Rangers by the end of the month.
That was a long way of saying that you think they're going to come up shy.
A long way to define my take as opposed to sitting on the fence.
Here's your schedule for the Texas Rangers for the rest of the month, okay? They've got 3 with the A's starting today. Then they go Atlanta, Colorado,
ooh,
Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Detroit for the end
Atlanta,
of the month.
Atlanta, Baltimore, solid. I know
Baltimore's good.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's playing better baseball, but they've got injuries and they're young.
Though. They've lost 9 of 10. Like, and, they started off hot, and
the
now
big
shortstop's
still
again.
Out.
Yeah, they're being the Pirates lately, but that division's not been good.
Atlanta obviously is really good, but then they have the A's, Colorado, Pittsburgh, and Detroit. Aside from Baltimore and Atlanta, so I don't think that that's anything to like
be scared
about.
That'd be fun to watch in May because, May baseball, it's not outstanding watching yet. But that'd be a fun one to watch now that Paul kind of put that out there and we're on different sides. Joe, which side are you on? Do you think the Astros will be in first place on June 1st?
I don't, but I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah, I think a game or two. I think there'll be a game or two back.
The Rangers, side. That's not an awful schedule. And right now they're healthy. Like, that's their big thing. Like, I don't think any of us believe that they're going to. Yeah, DeGrom. But, the rest of their team is healthy.
Good. Yeah, they've been handling it all right. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Blankers mentioned what ESPN is predicting the Texans' win record to be. Vegas is kind of contradicting what they think the Texans' win record is going to be. And, yeah, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville making a difference in people's lives, particularly guys that are losing their hair. Because whether you got a bald spot or you're thinning, and you just don't think there's anything you can do about it but shave your head, there's a solution. And it's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. It's actually fixing the problem. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go in other areas. So what Doc Linville does is he takes follicles from the sides and the back, puts them where you need them most, and gets almost immediate results. I did the procedure, and I was shocked in the fact that when I went home that night and looked in the mirror, I could see all of the follicles. I could see them starting to already grow and take. And then when I followed the timeline and I knew that, you know, it was going to take 6 months or so, 6 to 8 months for the true, really strong, long hairs to develop, I was like encouraged because every day when I looked in the mirror, those hairs were getting stronger. They were getting longer. And then I was told they're going to be there for the long haul. 95%+, and Doc Linville has to say 95 to border on the lesser number, but he normally says 95 to 99% of all the follicles move, stay, grow, and worth you for the long haul. That was the game changer for me. So you need to check it out and see if it's right for you too. It's simple because as an ESPN listener, you get a consultation for free that normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and set up an appointment. No obligation to you, no money out of pocket, no commitment that you have to make. Go in and ask all the questions. Find out if the procedure is right for you. See how long the procedure takes, the recovery time, all the different things that are going to interest you, including that success rate that I was talking about, and see if it might be something you'll consider. If you're the next in line to get the NeoGraft procedure, you will be so glad you did. Granato and I will tell you every single day how great it is because we had the procedure done and we've seen the results. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by because I believe in these guys and I think Doc's the best in the business at the NeoGraft. Check them out today at 975hair.com.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Key from L.A. is trolling so hard right now.
So hard.
Dodgers have Padres Twins back-to-back with Braves and Tampa this month. Do you see us crying? Who's crying, Key from L.A.?
No, Key, here's the key.
Was Paulie crying?
No, here's the key for Key, because he always thinks this is suddenly a Dodgers show. Well, then you know that it's not by now. But if you don't, here's another yet rude awakening for you. No one asked, do you think the Dodgers are going to be competing or in first place with the Padres by the end of the month? No, the question was the Rangers and the Astros, and we addressed it as we always do on the Killer Bees. The Killer Key can go worry about the Dodgers.
That's too big of a compliment.
On his own time.
That's too big of a compliment for him.
The Killer
Key. 713-780-ESPN. I'm just going to bite my tongue. 713-780-37. I don't want to say something that's going to get me in trouble and canceled. Oh. Vegas has the Texans favored in three games. Minor improvement of what we've seen on DraftKings. We'll get to that in a second. Let's go to Pena, though. Pena wants to talk about the Texans' schedule. 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. Pena, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Pena?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I have no problem. I only have one problem with the Texans' schedule, well, from the NFL. I think that the Texans and the Panthers game should be at least a Thursday night game, not as much as a Sunday night or a Monday night game, but it's deserving of a Thursday night game because how often do you see the 1, 2, and 3 all in one game, you know? That's the only problem I have, guys. Y'all have a wonderful weekend with your families. That's it, y'all.
Appreciate it, Pena. Hope you have a wonderful weekend with your family as well.
Happy Mother's Day. Take care of those in your life that mean the most to you.
Yeah. I don't care that the Texans are not on primetime. I'm going to be honest with you. The only reason that I care that the Texans don't have like more 3:05 games or a Thursday nighter or, I didn't think they were going to get a Sunday or a Monday nighter is the red zone like part. I like it when the Texans don't play at noon. That way I can focus all my energy on the red zone channel at noon because red zone noon Sunday is the best red zone experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that the Texans are going to bleed into that at least 15 times next season. But, look, I don't really care that the Texans aren't playing on primetime.
But, Jeremy, I think the fans do because, you know, in my experiences, you know, there's a story that goes out, and there was for the NFL that goes out for the NBA the same way about national appearances. And national appearances normally translate to meaningful, impactful teams, franchises, and players. And so I think fans take it personally for that reason. They feel like they're disrespected, and they're always looking for a reason to feel disrespected so they can come out firing anyway. But I think that's the way fans have been kind of raised and trained as they followed their teams. Like, you know, the Rockets forever, you knew you were a good team when you maximized the amount of national exposures you got. And so on the flip side, if you got a zero, and in the NBA you have to have at least one. But when you got a zero or a one or a single-digit low number, you were like, damn, they don't think we got anything. And I think coming off all of the negativity they've had in the last couple of years, I think that's why people are a little bit more worked up about it. They think that they've got hope again and potential and some young players. And so I think it bothers the fans for that reason more than anything else.
Yeah, maybe it does. I personally just don't care. I'll be honest. I don't care they don't have a primetime game. I saw some inconsistencies. DraftKings already posted, their sportsbook already posted a line for every single game in the NFL. Pretty amazing. DraftKings was the sportsbook that had the over-under, the win total for the Texans at 6.5. We saw some at 5.5. We saw DraftKings at 6.5. The problem, though, and Cody did the legwork on this, so I'll credit Cody Castuzio for doing this. He went each and every week and pulled the DraftKings odds for the Houston Texans, or the spread of every game that they have in 2023. DraftKings, who has the Houston Texans win total at 6.5 games, has the Texans favored to win 3 games. Like, the inconsistency there is kind of interesting. I may or may not, since I'm in Louisiana, I may or may not have found 12 teams that have a 3-win discrepancy, either the good side or the wrong side, in games favored versus their overall win total, and played all of those. I may or may not have done that. But it's fascinating to me that DraftKings has the Texans win total at 6.5 games, yet they're favored at only 3. This is bizarre.
Yeah, that is odd. That is maybe a mismanaged big picture if you were going to do the projection at the start of the year before the schedule came out. Because, yeah, you're right. When we trust Vegas for a reason, because they normally go in-depth and they cover all of that as well. Again, it's interesting to see the discrepancies. It's one thing to say, you know, from the spreads, you know, you're going to see a lot of that. And I think it's really odd that you can set spreads in every single game when you don't know who's starting, who's playing, who's injured, who's not. But you can capitalize on it, obviously. I just think from the overall just wins for the year perspective, I don't see any reason to budge off of that. I think Vegas got it right. The other casinos we were talking about, the 5.5 is the accurate number for over-under.
Why wouldn't anybody just go bet the under 6.5, and then since the lines are already out, pick the Texans to win every game? Why wouldn't you do that?
It's a good question. Because
I think there's plus expected value there, right? Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. Am I wrong? No, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's money to be made right now. I think you just pointed out one site where you could probably capitalize. I just think, to me, it's funny. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know when you do it this early, but if you do, you capitalize on that the spreads right now, right? You get that spread no matter what happens later on.
It's locked in. It's the moment you bet it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely money to be made.
I think the only thing I would say is that even though it does look like an inconsistency, like when you look at what they put out, they have the Texans are favored or dogs by within a field goal range in 9 of their games. So they're either between -3 and +3 in 9 of their games. Like, you know, on the road versus the Colts the last week of the season, they have the Texans +1.5. Well, you're already +3 when you're on the road. Right. So, like, they've already brought down the line.
You're still the underdog.
No, you still are. But, like, just that to me is where I don't think it's this huge inconsistency, because, like, there's 9 games where they think that you're within a field goal. Like, you're talking about a field goal? Like, yeah, that can swing between 3 and 8 wins.
But from, like, a betting perspective, if you – because the Vegas – like, DraftKings right now has the Texans favored in 3 games. Yet it has their win-loss total, their total on the year, at 6.5. So why wouldn't you go click under Texans 6.5 wins, but then go week by week and bet the Texans to win every single game?
It's
middling it. Well, you can't bet the money line yet. So you would have to just play, you know, Texans +9 against the Ravens, Texans -1 against the Colts. So it's basically like a glorified middle, but it's got a 3.5 win delta. Like, I think it's +EV. Like, I'm going to track it. May or may not have played it, but I'm definitely going to track it.
What are they favored against? They're favored against the Colts?
They're favored by 1 point against the Colts in week 2. They're favored by 1 point against the Bucs in week 9 at home. And then they're favored by 1.5 points against the Cardinals in week 11 at home.
I thought Tennessee might squeak in, but I think that because
those
of the fact that
those are tight.
Yeah, because I think Derrick Henry and Tannehill are the wild cards and all that.
Yeah, but Tajay Spears and Will Levis, baby. It's the new era of Tennessee Titans.
Tennessee is already thinking about moving on from Malik Willis, like cutting him?
Yeah, I did. Because they usually only keep 2 quarterbacks, which it might be a little different this year, though, because you can keep that 3rd quarterback. Or maybe I don't know if Dobbs is still there or not. They must hate him.
I guess they found out in practice what they didn't know before they drafted him.
It might not be a bad thing for Willis, though, like from a Willis side of it, because like you're behind Levis now. They don't think very much of you. It might be better for the like future of Willis to like hit the open market and kind of cherry pick what might give him the best spot and maybe like an ideal situation. Like if I'm him and like Baltimore comes calling, Indy comes calling, Philly comes calling,
just thinking,
you know,
where
those RPO style offenses, those would fit him much better.
Even though they drafted Hooker, but
I don't know if he's a good enough thrower of the ball.
I thought Detroit, because then you have two young quarterbacks that you could be grooming when you move on from Goff. But, yeah, I definitely think there's some opportunities for him to kind of spread his wings and go somewhere else and maybe get someone to kind of groom him.
Texans schedule. What are your thoughts? Vera, we'll get to you on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Do Texans fans have a reason to be upset now that the schedule is out? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Vera wants to get in on the Houston Texans schedule. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Vera, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you letting me take my call. It was so good to see you both at the NFL draft party at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage.
You didn't see Blanker.
Onto the Texans schedule, I think we can go. It's not unreasonable to say we could go 500 within the division. NFC South has probably been at its weakest in a long time. We could probably go, 500 there, so 2-2. And then you get the odd game here and there. So I'm putting my expectations, I'm kind of putting the floor at 6 and the ceiling at maybe 8 wins. I mean, the defense performs significantly better than expected. I can see them sort of doing that, but I kind of wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it. Thank you for letting me talk.
You got it, Vera. It was great seeing you at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage. That was a really fun night, mostly because Blankers was not there. That's what enjoyed about it the most.
Appreciate it. Kind of like today.
What do you think the I love these remotes.
Yeah, I love it.
what do you think that range is? I had the Texans going 6-11. I'm going to put my Homer hat on a little bit later, though, and try to talk you into something with my Homer hat on. But my serious hat and my serious face, I always got a game face on. I have them 6-11. I'll go to 8 on the high end of that range. Like if I'm going to say 6 wins, I'll say the low end's 4, maybe 3, and then the high end's 8. So I don't necessarily disagree with Vera, to be honest.
I think the ceiling for me is 7.
Is the roof.
Yeah, I think the ceiling for me is 7. I just can't see them getting to 500 or above this year. Again, I'll preface it by saying I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're a year away. So I think that they're going to take some lumps again this year, no matter how easy the schedule is. And I hear what he's saying. The division isn't like a powerhouse, but I really believe that, I said 5. I could see them getting to 7, but I could also see them possibly slipping up worse than 5. So I think it's... I think 5-7 for me is the fair range.
Yeah, mine's a little bit bigger, but it's also bigger on the lower end. I could see 3-8 when it comes to that. The division's interesting to me because I think you can draw a path to the division being pretty good. I think you can draw a path to the division being pretty bad. Like, was Jacksonville last year just taking advantage of a weak schedule and a weak division, and they're kind of a mediocre team? Like, maybe. Or Trevor Lawrence could take even a bigger step into year 3. Maybe they're the powerhouse of the AFC South. The Titans, I don't love the Titans roster. Like, Tannehill, mid. I don't think Will Levis plays much in his first year until, they give up on Tannehill or they fall out of playoff contention. Derrick Henry's old. I don't love the skill position players they have around him. Like, they drafted Burks, but he did nothing last year. But Mike Vrabel's a good coach and always wins games when he's not supposed to win games. So, like, are they going to be bad because their roster's bad, or is Vrabel going to play them close to a 500 record? And then the Colts, to me, I think are the most volatile team in the division, to be completely honest. Like, I don't think Anthony Richardson, I thought he was a project 2 years away from being 2 years away, but that's the perfect system for him. They still have one of the very best running backs in the entire league. Their offensive line was in shambles last year, but it's not a bad offensive line in terms of name value, and they still have a solid defense. So I think the AFC South could go one of two ways. I think it could be atrocious. I think it could be better than people think.
Yeah, look, to me, I think the Colts, it's all on Richardson. I think the Colts, and this has been the same story that I've said and we've all seen for the last 3 years, and the Matt Ryan experiment failed and the Carson Wentz experiment failed. But I still think the rest of the roster is of a certain level to where I think that they should be competing for one of the last playoff spots at worst. I think that there's enough talent there. And so I think I'm a little surprised, first and foremost, that they're going to already anoint Richardson the starter when I thought he was 2 years away. And I think that's going to be the barometer that dictates it for them. And that's almost disappointing for me, but it's good for the Texans. Because if you're the Texans, I think that's going to help you immensely. And I think you can catch them at least once and maybe twice, though you never really play well in Indy. I think Jacksonville's the only one where you know who they are, and they're probably going to be that and better the rest of the year. Whereas Tennessee is a crapshoot because of quarterback and, you know, what they still might be willing to do or looking to do. If they're still looking to move Henry and Tannehill, I mean, then no matter how good of a coach Vrabel is, and they do have some good pieces on defense, I could see that be a fast-track rebuild that goes completely in the tank, you know, on a rapid pace this season, and that's another advantage for the Texans.
Don't you think the ship has sailed on that, though? Like, the idea of trading Tannehill and Henry this late?
Because they haven't done it yet?
Yeah, like, I feel like the ship sailed on that. Like, I almost feel like this offseason's pretty complete. Like, you're going to get the veteran June cuts, things like that, but those usually aren't players of huge significance. Like, if they didn't trade those guys before the draft, I don't see any way possible they don't enter the season with them.
I think they could be deadline guys, though.
I could see that.
I think Derrick Henry,
they're both on the team.
I think if the Cowboys are still struggling to figure out running back or some of the other teams, and I know Tennessee really wants to unload that contract.
They have Tony Pollard.
But Tony Pollard's coming off a pretty significant injury.
Yeah,
he's their only guy.
Like,
they got Jones from Tampa Bay.
They expect him back before the start of the year. They also drafted Deuce Vaughn.
I don't think Pollard's going to be ready week one. And I think Pollard, if they're smart, they're gonna let him take all the time he needs. But I think that Derrick Henry, there are teams that still probably have an eye on Derrick Henry, and I know Tennessee would still like to unload him.
Yeah, I think Derrick Henry.
Three-month recovery period for Pollard.
I think he should be ready for the first week of the season.
Yeah, he's supposed to be ready. I think he's going to be ready for camp.
But like Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook, I think, are probably the most intriguing names right now going into the season at the running back position because there's still rumors the Vikings are going to cut Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, that's weird to me.
And like, a team like the Jets would make a lot of sense for either of these guys. Like if they have an injury, like if Breece Hall were to get hurt again, they're going to go all in, right? Like they're going to – this is their window with Aaron Rodgers. Like is there another team that could acquire a guy like this? I think the answer would be yes. And, like, that to me is where the schedule's tough, where, like, you know who you're playing. But, like, what if Will Levis is on the field week 15 and week 17? Like, I think it changes towards the upside of the win total versus the downside. Like, having Tennessee on the back end could be really interesting.
To Joe's point, we're talking about the two guys on offense more so than anything. But when you look at their defensive players that other teams would love to have and would covet because they're veterans that have bigger contracts but have tons of ability – I think before the trade deadline, those guys come into play too. If they underachieve and or they just decide to pull the plug on trying to make another run on a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think they could be deadline guys. I think that's a good point. I just it's May 12th. The draft is over. Like, why are you cutting the guys? Like, you're going to cut Tannehill? You're going to cut Henry? Like, I don't see that.
I see your point on the draft picks perspective because the draft's already passed. And you don't know what you'd be getting from said teams. You might be trying to get something for a Derrick Henry for. I could still see a Buffalo looking at a Derrick Henry going, if we could get Derrick Henry with that big battering ram style in cold weather, and even if we don't use him as our featured back, but we can get him and add him to what we already have, advantage Bills.
I disagree. With that contract. Like, he's going to be a gimmicky player on that contract. Like, I don't see anybody trading for Derrick Henry. I don't see anybody trading for Dalvin Cook. I think that's why they're still on their current teams. But at the same time, like, the Titans – like, they're probably not going to move. They're not going to cut him. They're not going to cut Derrick
Henry. No, I don't
think
they're going to cut him.
The Vikings with Dalvin Cook's weird to me. Like, why? Why are you cutting him at this point of the offseason? Like, that's something that you do before the draft trying to unload him. I think they were trying to unload Dalvin Cook, but they couldn't find a trade partner because of his salary. But, like, at this point of the year, the Vikings are an aspiring playoff team. You're moving on from Dalvin Cook, and now Alexander Mattison is your best running back? Like, what's the plan there? Like, what are you doing? Now, in terms of, like, trade deadline options, I think that makes much more sense than them being June cuts. I'm fascinated by the Dalvin Cook situation, what's going on in Minnesota, like wanting to move on from him.
I don't see it this year. I mean, you don't know what you're going to do with Tannehill after this year. You don't know how committed you are to him. But you know that that division, yeah, I mean, obviously the sexy pick is Detroit. But with what they still have offensively and defensively, and you still have the best receiver in football, and you still have Dalvin Cook, as you said, I don't know, teams aren't knocking down the door because he's a running back, I guess, but he's still got a boatload
contract.
Of talent.
He well,
that too,
money.
But he's also got a lot of talent left to where I'm just saying, for one more year, I would just say, hey, look, we got a legit shot to win the division. Go for it.
Yeah, it's Cousins' final year. Like, this is what your one last shot with, yep. Like, that is your three-headed monster offensively. I wouldn't cut Dalvin. Ken and Katie, this is how I feel about the Texans. Yes, they should be improved, but they were so bad compared to most of the other teams. They were still in the bottom three teams. Five wins would be a success. I think that's very fair of Ken and Katie. Brandon T. said, what would you put the over-under at for Stroud on touchdowns and interceptions? Vegas had his touchdown total at 22. I thought that was a little high. I'd probably put it at like 20 and a half.
I like 20. Yeah.
Maybe 20. Probably 20 and a half just to get it, you know, sure. Swinging a little bit. Interception. Look, because I don't think the Texans are going to throw the ball a lot. So this factors into like the touchdown and interception total because I don't think the Texans are going to try to put a lot on C.J. Stroud in his first year. I think they want to be run-centric, especially with where they're coming from. So I'll put 20 and a half touchdowns on Stroud's over-under. How do you all feel about that? And would you take the
I'm
over
good on
or the
that.
Under? Would you take the over or the under?
I'm going to take the over.
What do you think?
Same.
All right, now the over-under is 21. 21 and a half is the new over-under. And then 11 interceptions is what I put the interception total on. Because, again, I don't think this offense is going to throw a ton.
Going to take the over. I was thinking 13 or 14. I'm going to take the over. He's going to make some mistakes. I don't think he's going to make them every single, you know, year of every game of his career. But I think, again, with that rookie quarterback and all the numbers that support, most rookie quarterbacks don't succeed year one. I think he's going to make some bad throws and some mistakes. He's going to take some lumps, and I think he's going to, closer to 13 or 14 for sure.
Only five quarterbacks last year had 14 or more interceptions. Mills and Dak led the league with 15. Kirk, Cousins, Josh Allen, Derek Carr had 14. But those are guys that like all threw the ball quite a bit. Like I don't see the Texans throwing it a lot. I just don't. I think they're going to be a run-centric team that I think if they throw it over 25 times, it's a game that they're so far behind.
Joe?
I think we'll probably get I'll probably go the over, but it's tight. That's a good number. Because I think I think last year's hard to get a full read on the situation because you only have, what, Kenny Pickett? I mean, if you go back to just 2021, there's 16 quarterbacks in the NFL that threw over 11 interceptions.
Even Pickett only played – he started 12 games.
Yeah, I mean –
played 13.
And Zach Wilson's on that list. Mac Jones is on that list. Like, you've got rookie quarterbacks littered on these lists of high interception totals. So, like,
Davis Mills had 15 last year. So
he had 15.
Ugh, he stinks.
Led the league, him and Dak. Dak played 12 games and threw 15 picks. At least Davis Mills played 15 games.
Okay.
I would take the over 11.
Yeah, I like it at 13 or 14.
Maybe I need to readjust my number. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I'm looking at this Astros roster. I'm looking at who's on the farm, Blankers, and I think we might see another Miles Straw type of trade in July. I'll tell you what I mean. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something that I hold near and dear to my life is my home, and one reason that I hold it near and dear is because it's my home. But I always look for a home remodel. Like, I'm always thinking about something we can do with the house. Can we improve this area? Can we improve that area? I'm always wondering about that. And like, yeah, of course we can fix this. We can fix that. But the big hang-up is always, well, who's doing the work for us? Is it somebody we can trust? Is it somebody that's going to, you know, give us a good deal? That's always been the major hang-up. Well, now that solution is solved. Pinnacle Construction is here, and they're for you, and it's peak time. Whether you just want something fresh, whether you're just creating a new look, how about your kitchen? You want cabinets? You want new floors? You want new tile, maybe in your kitchen, hardwood floor. If you can think of it, Pinnacle Construction can do it. How about the bathroom? Maybe you want new flooring in there, new cabinets in there. Maybe you want a new tub. Maybe you want to totally redo your shower tub situation. Well, they got you there. Room addition, too. Put a whole room onto your house. Pinnacle Construction has you covered. You think it, they can do it. You've been waiting for the right people, someone you can trust, not charge you through the roof. Well, that is Pinnacle Construction. General contractor with decades of experience that will help with any kind of repair. I understand. understand that choosing a team to remodel your home can be confusing. That's why I'm telling you about Pinnacle Construction. Doug Johnson, the owner of Pinnacle, is a native Houstonian serving all of the greater Houston area. Doug and his team will guarantee quality in-house work, and they're here to stay. They're not leaving you. They've been here for over 2 decades. They're licensed and insured with stellar customer service for every project and every customer. Maybe it's not front of your mind, but I bet you it's in the front of mind for your wife. You know, Mother's Day's on Sunday. Maybe surprise her with something like this. Maybe her birthday's coming up this summer. Surprise her with something like this. Get your free estimate with a qualified Pinnacle Construction technician right now. Call or text 281-900-3004. Call or text 281-900-3004. You can visit them online, 975generalcontractor.com, 975generalcontractor.com. Ask for the ESPN discount. Financing options are available as well. Pinnacle Construction, born and building in Texas, with over 20 years of general contracting experience.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. I'm thrown off by this text. It says, Pauly G and Mapes, who would win a dodgeball contest between Shore Press Academy versus Strike Jesuit?
Oh,
Killer
B
time.
I think he was talking about matchups today. I heard it when I was driving in, and he made some reference to his hoity-toity, very rich school used to talk a lot of mess to like a lesser-off school and then get their doors blown off.
Interesting. We should have a dodgeball tournament between shows. That'd be a lot of fun.
Well, you would fit right in with the older regimes of what went down at this station. You love that show-on-show combat.
I mean, I think a dodgeball tournament would be very fun.
That'd be great. It'd be so much fun.
I mean, I think we'd win.
I think we got a shot.
I mean, maybe Paul and Mapes?
Yeah, like, but they'd be 3-on-2.
I mean, Mapes looks looks like he already was an extra in the original dodgeball with the headbands and the hair. He looks like he was on Ben Stiller's team.
Did you guys see their brand?
I feel like he'd be on the rival.
You're right. Yeah.
They announced they're doing a second one.
Really?
Yeah, Vince Vaughn's coming back. They're doing dodgeball too, like 20 years later.
What the hell else has Vince Vaughn got going on? He hasn't done anything in like years.
The only time I ever see Vince Vaughn is when he's at a Cubs game doing the seventh inning stretch.
Yeah. That would be like, bad. I'm intrigued. I'll watch that.
As long as they do all the filming during the day, I'm sure that Jason Bateman would be in.
I don't think it'll be great, but I'll watch. I'll watch. There's no doubt. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on today, Lamont?
Hey, what's up, fellas, man? A question, and this is a very unorthodox question, man, but, you know, I'm hearing everybody, giving D'Amico Ryan's accolades, and the guy's a nice guy. He's modern. He's not old. He's not Bill O'Brien. But one thing I want to know, and over the last couple of years, we have seen Cully make in-game mistakes. We didn't see Lovie Smith. We've seen Bill O'Brien do it a lot of times, in his 6 or 7 year period. His clock management and in-game decisions was kind of throw it off. But I guess what really scares me is Nathaniel Hackett. I know it's almost impossible to ask the coach, how are you preparing for that? But I really want to know, how is D'Amico Ryans do we simulate games? I really want to know if it's crunch time, third and goal with 1 second left, and you down by 3 points, what are you going to do? We have to ask questions like that. I only say that because of Nathaniel Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett was the extreme case whatever his name is, from Denver Broncos. And I'm just kind of interested about that. And I have the Texans going over 6 games, fellas. That's all I have.
He has them going what?
Over six games. Yeah.
Look, I mean, first of all, I think part of the Nick Caserio thing is he's going to print out those little cards for everybody for the analytics on what to do and when. I mean, seriously, with Lamont's question, I think I talked a little bit about when we were doing the over under for the season. It's not just success rate of a rookie quarterback. It's you got a coordinator for the first time calling offensive plays. You got D'Amico, first-time head coach. I think mistakes are going to happen across the board. I think they're all going to make mistakes and take lumps along the way as they get their feet wet. I have total confidence that D'Amico is going to do a way better job than David Culley, And I think that he's going to do a better job than Lovie Smith. And I think he's going to surround himself with, you know, the people that he trusts that are going to be in position. So much like what Nathaniel Hackett had to do on the fly after the season started, trying to get a whatever they gave that glorified associate head coach title to that dude that just told him when to throw the flag and what to do in certain clock management situations. I think the Texans are going to be extremely structured and organized. I think D'Amico's in complete control. Will he make some mistakes? Sure. But I don't worry about it the same way I did the other two guys the Texans just got over.
Yeah, I imagine they would work on it like in simulated situations and things like that. I'm sure that there is work to it. But to Lamont's point, you never really know what a coach is going to be like in game management situations until there's game management situations. So jury's still out for a first-year head coach. I'm sure Nathaniel Hackett worked on those situations before he got into those situations. And he got into those situations and then it's the Mike Tyson thing. Now, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, and late-game situations with very little time to think about it are entirely different than simulated situations.
Yeah, I was a little concerned about Nathaniel Hackett, and I'm not as confident that he actually worked on him because I think that's why they finally had to come to the crossroads where they had to make the knee-jerk reaction and bring in someone mid-season or during the season because I don't know how, you know, again, he was not only first-time head coach, but he had never called plays before. And so there was all these different things he was worried about, and he was hyper-focused as he should have been on the offense. But overall, as a head coach and your first time, you know, going through the ringer, those are the kind of things that I'm not sure everybody prepares for. So, yeah, whether he prepared for it or not, he did a very bad job. But that's a good thing for D'Amico Ryans because now you also learn from what's been done in the past to not do the same mistakes.
But to Lamont's point, I think that's a very fair criticism of a first-year head coach. Like, that's one of the things I'll be watching very closely is D'Amico, is those game management situations. And I think that D'Amico, because he's loved here, we kind of sometimes minimize, what if he's bad in those situations? Like, we don't know. We hope that he's not, but we didn't think Nathaniel Hackett would be. I mean, you had some concerns because you watched him a lot in Green Bay. Hear me out on this.
Okay.
I think that the closer and closer we get to July, we're already starting to monitor some names for the Astros. I think we have a shot to see another Miles Straw type of trade in July. Rewind a couple of years ago, James Click traded the Astros' everyday center fielder for a middle reliever and, you know, a prospect by the name of Yiner Diaz. The Astros felt like Jake Myers was a better option than Miles Straw, even though Miles Straw was getting everyday at-bats. I think James Click thought that Chaz McCormick was a better option than Miles Straw, but Dusty refused to play Chaz McCormick. Could we possibly be seeing a situation where we see something like that again this year? Now, Drew Gilbert would need to continue to impress, but Drew Gilbert has 2.5 months to continue to impress. Could the Astros trade, let's call it Jake Myers, because I think Jake Myers has more trade value than Chaz McCormick. I think Chaz McCormick's a fourth outfielder who's 28 years old. Jake Myers plays defense at a very high level. He's an everyday center fielder in Major League Baseball, but the Astros love Drew Gilbert. You probably also need to get Michael Brantley back for this situation to happen, because if you don't get Michael Brantley back, you probably need a left fielder. So Brantley is back. Drew Gilbert is playing well. The Astros want him as their center fielder of the future, and they might even feel like he's an upgrade over Jake Myers come July 31st, and you use Jake Myers as the young player, not really a prospect, but the young player that can fetch you a position of need, a la Yankees Cardinals last year with Harrison Bader and Jordan Montgomery.
I mean, I think it all comes down to teams finding value both short and long term with Jake Myers, and if you can find the right team, I'm looking forward to that. I'd be open to that because the platoon system that they've been using in center field, it gets you through the regular season. It's frustrating at times, no matter which side of the fence you're on. And I've been a pro Chaz guy and very upset and defensive of the fact that he's been handled poorly. But I also am realistic in the fact that I don't think Chaz is the center fielder of the future. I don't think Chaz is anything more than, you know, basically a fourth best outfielder on a great team or, in this case, the best option that you had before he got hurt in center field, and then Jake Myers found it. But if you want more consistency, if you want a guy that plays every day, if you think Drew Gilbert's that guy, then you have a surplus, and you just have to take the best offer to get something that maybe can help you in a different way. I'm all for that because I don't think you worry about the difference between winning and losing in the playoffs based on who plays center field for you. But if you can fill a gap and a hole where somewhere else there is legit concern, like what's happening at first base or what's happening behind the plate, if you have any concerns about Diaz and or if Maldonado's just fallen off the planet, that if you can fill a different hole because you have two center fielders and someone wants one of them, I'm fine with that.
Drew would have to play well for 2.5 months. You probably need Brantley back. You might still need for a starter. I can see a scenario where we see Jake Myers as the Miles Straw of a trade in July. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line.
Just real quick before we get off of that, do you think Gilbert makes an appearance in Sugarland, or does he have to before he would get fast-tracked?
I think he will make an appearance in Sugarland, but I don't think he has to. Okay. Absolutely not. Right. He doesn't have to. No. No,
yeah, you see guys I think go we've from, seen from guys double go a from double A,
a lot of times. Sometimes double A pitching's like better than triple A pitching.
Yeah.
Because that's where like the real prospects are versus like the, you know, 4A pitchers, kind of the 6th, 7th starters, like the B-lacks of the world.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah, we've seen J-Rod do it. We've seen it's become a trend now that you don't need to make even Luis Garcia. Pitchers probably more prevalent than hitters to your point. But I was just curious if just for that extra seasoning and that extra evaluation to make sure he's not a 4A player for this year, you send him down. He makes a stop in AAA just to see how he's doing against that pitching as well.
All right, it's a game everybody loves. Who said it? Joe George reads his quotes from ESPN 97.5 personalities and the Killer Bees. Guess who said it? It's next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.